This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Welcome to Baseball Outside the Box, educational podcast for coaches, players, and parents from all over the world, where we bring you the most innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds who love to challenge the status quo. Hello, everyone from around the world. I'm Pete Caliendo. We are doing a show from the Lineup Media Group Studios. We're excited about the show today, but before we start, don't forget, we love you going to our website, Baseball Outside the Box. Check out iTunes and Stitcher. Join the show. Tell all your friends about it. If you really like the show, give us a 5-star rating. You know, that obviously gets the show out even more to more people around the world. By joining the show, you can get all the shows on the Lineup Media Group. And you can simply go by lineupmediagroup.com, and you'll see all our shows listed there on the website. Also, love getting your emails, especially the baseball questions. But ask any questions you have, and we'll get you the answers from all our experts. Email us at info@baseballoutsidethebox.com. I will respond right away. We use social media a lot, so don't forget. Go to Twitter, @baseballout, lots of tips. And we also have on our website, we forgot to mention, baseballoutsidethebox.com, the instructional DVDs. There's 5 of them for coaches who want to run a fun, organized, and productive practice. That's got over 100 games, drills, and special skills to help you work with young players. So if you want to order DVDs, just go to the website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. Now, a little bit about our guest today. This is going to be an exciting show. I think it's a great topic that needs to be discussed that's going to help coaches, players, and parents understand how to become a better player, better person. Our guest today is Alan Jaeger, owner of the world-renowned Jaeger Sports, a program which helps develop athletes physically, but more importantly, how to be in the best state of mind to perform at a high level. That's why I'm excited about it. Alan's got an outstanding background. He's known all over the world. He's also been a speaker for the International Sports Group, who, as you know, I'm part of that program where we educate coaches all over the world. Alan's played 2 years at LA Mission Junior College, 1 year at Cal State U Northridge. He coached with the Chatham team in the Cape Cod League, which is one of the best collegiate leagues in the country where you see all the top players go. And he's consulted with a number of major league organizations, including the Chicago Cubs, Indians, and the Texas Rangers. Ironically, the 2 teams that are in the World Series last year, and that's outstanding. He's also worked with many pitchers, including a 2002 Cy Young Award winner, Barry Zito. Now, what makes Alan, in my opinion, extremely unique in the industry is that something that I'm fascinated by, his teaching and his training background with yoga, the Far Eastern arts like Zen and Taoism. And I'm sure Alan's going to correct me if I mispronounce that last one, because I have no idea what Taoism is. So I hope I pronounce that correct. You're going to want to reach out to Alan during the show or after the show, and I'm going to give you some information. One way you could do that is go to his website, JaegerSports.com. That's spelled J-A-E-G-E-R sports.com. And also, you're going to want to join him on Twitter. He's got millions of followings. Incredible how many followings he has, because he always has some great information on the development of the game, the mental part, the physical. People love going to his Twitter. And that Twitter is @JaegerSports. Again, J-A-E-G-E-R Sports, @JaegerSports. So don't forget to go to his Twitter. All right, now, the topic for today is something I believe, again, the game needs desperately, which is a unique topic, and Alan will explain it a lot better than I will, but merging the Western-style mechanics with the insight of the Far Eastern mind and using meditation to help us help get in what we will all of us commonly know as peak performance or being in the zone. On the second half of the show, we're going to be actually talking about some training methods, and Alan's going to give you also the website where to go to a great article that he's written that you'll be able to go and see a lot of the techniques and the training that you'll be able to do in your practices. This is a must in all your practices for baseball players to make sure that your players are in a better state of mind so they're able to perform extremely well. So let's get started, and I want to thank and welcome Alan to Baseball Outside the Box. Alan, how you doing?
I'm great, Pete, and I'm inspired just hearing you talk. That was impressive. I love listening to people that are free and concise and natural. And honestly, I know it sounds funny. We didn't talk about this, but I think I did mention this to you at the ABCA show, but you just have this gift, man, where you really relate and connect, and I think you get – you're very clear about getting information out there. So I appreciate it. I thought you summarized, you know what we've talked about and the topic today. And I'm totally honored to be on this. You've done so much in the baseball community, and honestly, it's a thrill for me to be on the show, and it's a thrill to talk to you about mental game and it, as we've talked about, implementing mental practice into the plan. And so again, I'm just pumped to be on.
That's awesome. Thanks, Alan. I appreciate the kind words. It's always nice hearing kind words because it gives you kind of a reinforcement that you're doing the right thing. And I think we all need that. And I know you can motivate people and coaches. So, I, again, thank you very much. And I'm excited. And I'll tell you why. Because, you know, I've spent a lot of times, you know, and it's probably 20 times in the Orient in different areas like Japan and Taiwan. Now, I haven't studied the things that you've studied. That's why I'm really interested in this, between the physical and the fundamental training, the techniques. The reason I'm interested is because I always see the Oriental players, especially Japan or Korea, Taiwan, the ones that have been playing longer, how well they perform under pressure. And, you know, the thing I wanted to start with before we even get into anything is the interesting part is how, you know, they can deal with pressure, but a lot of times in game situations, you know, we tell players, and including myself, I used to do this a long time ago, I tell players all the time, you know, think about, on defense, before the ball's hit to you, what are you going to do? But it seems like the Japanese or the Oriental players, they don't seem to think about that. It seems to become a natural reaction due to their training. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, well, I think number one, I mean, I could, you know, I can't speak for, you know, all the Asian countries, but I do think Japan in particular, probably Korea to a similar degree. You know, number one, look, they take a lot of pride in reps and discipline. So part of why they look so natural and freed up is because they've done so many reps and they have the discipline. Part of their culture to do so much work that it becomes very unconscious and very instinctive. And so I think it's in the mental game world, if you will, like it's under the umbrella because of the discipline part of it. But I think where we see like what the zone is about or peak performance guys that look like they're completely free and relaxed, I think that they're getting there, not that they're not doing mental practice or meditation either, but I think that they're getting to a zone state, if you will, because they're doing so many reps that it's like they're changing their default, which is a word I love. You know, they're changing their default to instincts because they're doing so many reps, and it's almost like there's no time to think about the consequences or think about who they're playing. They're just so immersed into the activity of what they've worked so hard on that it's almost like a release, if you will, in the game situations.
That's interesting. Now, you know, we're gonna get started actually on some other topics. But since you hit that, I wanted to ask this: our players, if we can't do the reps that they're doing to get into that state of mind or however you want to call it, And I know we're gonna get into the training part, but how can our players get to that level? Is it only by reps?
Well, look, I mean, I guess I think it's very cultural. I think that their culture. Right or wrong, I mean, I tend to agree with the fact that you have to have discipline to do a, I was a worker, I was a rep guy, so I relate to it. I came home from school and shot baskets for 3 hours a day because I loved it, and I couldn't get enough of it, and I felt a sense of, I don't know, accomplishment because of the routine, or it was just, look, it's as simple as it gets. It's practice. So I think that in the U.S., I do think nowadays with the internet and so many coaches that are just really interested in and looking at the nuances of the game now, like this conversation we're having, I do think that the kids in the U.S. also work very, very hard. It's not a knock on them. I think it's just that the Japanese culture, for whatever reason, they might just go an extra, I don't know what the number is, but 10 or 20% more of the reps.
Sure.
But I guess to answer your question really, Pete, and it's a great question, I think that no matter what, if even if you didn't do as many quote-unquote reps as theoretically the Japanese may do compared to the U.S. or compared to other countries, I still think at the end of the day that where the rubber hits the road is that if we incorporated more practice time into the mental part via meditation and relaxation and breathing and visualization, I do believe that it may not really matter if, let's say, they put in 48 hours a week and we put in 40. I almost would say that pound for pound, if you put in 4 out of 40 hours a week into meditation, to me, it almost maybe becomes a moot point, that extra hour, extra eight hours that theoretically that another culture may be doing. So at the end of the day, I would say this. Yes, if you have the luxury and the mentality to do the tons and tons of extra reps that some cultures do, great. But I think that pound for pound at the end of the day, that's why I love this topic. If we just, in a 3-hour practice plan, for example, if we spend even 15 minutes on mental practice, so to speak, I think that the translation or whatever you want to call it, the conversion rate is so off the charts of benefits that in a way it's almost like that 15 minutes to me is worth 4 hours of physical practice. You know what I mean? Like that's how powerful and effective that the developmental process could be by implementing mental practice as opposed to just adding more hours of physical drills.
You know, that makes so much sense. Now it's a little clear for me because I always thought, you know, that if we just train a lot, that'll be easy. But of course, you need the training time. But if you can, you know, if you only have so much training time, and now we're talking about, you know, doing some mental preparation during our practices, that really explains it. Now, let's get started with this because I noticed you said baseball is a mentally challenged sport, probably the number one. Explain that to our audience because I think that'll carry into the actual process as we get into this.
Yep, it's a great question. I always tell people when I've spoken in the past, anybody that wants to talk mental game, I always say golf and baseball are one and two. There's not a close third. Now, I don't know cricket and I don't know some other sports, but I've played golf and tennis and baseball and hockey and probably a little bit of soccer, a little bit of volleyball. So, I mean, but I can say of the football, you know, I haven't played that much, but you know, whatever. I get it for the most part. I think that baseball and golf are so mental. And here's the simple reason why. There is a lot of dead time in those two sports. Now in football, if you're the kicker or the quarterback, maybe the receiver, basketball, maybe shooting free throws, hockey, maybe like a penalty shot or maybe the goalie, you know, there is dead time there as well, but there's a lot of movement and there's just a lot of opportunity for just being instinctive. Where baseball, there's what, 45 seconds or whatever it is between pitches. There's 20 to 30 minutes between at bats. If you're in the field, you may not get a ball for an hour.
Yeah.
And golf, think about it. Golf, you know, par 72, you take seven. Let's say you're a really good golfer and you take 72 shots. Well, it takes 5 hours or 4 hours. So even golf, you know, and what that does, of course, is that really magnifies each play. So if I hit a drive and that's my first shot, I have 3 or 4 minutes before my next shot. That's a lot of time to think about the next shot and how important every shot is. Now, my next shot, I hit an iron. Now it takes me 3 or 4 minutes to get to the green, right? Well, now I'm going to putt. So the dead time to me is the key. because what it does is it gives the mind a chance to think, and it gives the person a chance to focus on maybe things outside of where they want to be, the future, the score, the consequences, who's watching, what's at stake. So in a nutshell, Pete, really, I mean, I'm sure there's other pieces we can break it down, but it, more than anything, it's just that there is a lot of dead time between movements.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons, unfortunately, you know, we tend to lose kids in the game, too, not just because they fail, but also because it tends to be, you know, a long game. There's breaks in the middle, and so that makes sense. Now, here's one of the things. I was reading your article, and in your article, you were talking about the mental game, and you said two of the most important components of the mental game is meditation, which I've never heard of in the game of baseball, and breathing. And if I remember correctly, you said, you know, breathing is how we live, and why aren't we working on it?
Well, I mean, yeah, another way of saying that too is that our breath keeps us alive 24 hours a day. Our breath is, as one of my a teacher says, is the single greatest detoxification, you know, tool we have. You could list 100 benefits that the breath gives you, whether it's oxygenating the brain, oxygenating your body, removing stress, removing tension, helping to bring you to the present moment. So yes, the breath has, it's like it has unlimited benefits, and it's there every day, every moment for us. So why not take the time to spend with it? Also, by the way, another thing I love about the breath, it's an instinct. Mm-hmm. And if you study the zone or you study peak performance, you know, a huge piece of that is that you're in trust mode. You're totally trusting your instincts. So just by nature of the breath being an instinct, it would make sense that, hey, let's spend some time with our instincts. Let's not spend time so much in our head and our thoughts that tend to get us in trouble. Let's go to where we want to be that's instinctive. And oh, by the way, it happens to be this amazing, beneficial tool, whether again it's physical health benefits or mental health benefits or emotional health benefits, spiritual health benefits. So yes, the breath becomes to me one of the single greatest tools and metaphors for what you can work on. And you know, if you study meditation in most cultures, I know the ones that I've studied, you know, or at least mental practice, you know, the breath is always seems to be the foundation of any form of mental practice or meditation. That doesn't have to be the only, you know, point of focus. At some point, I actually like the idea of meditating to where you don't have a point of focus. You're just in what's called open focus. Mm-hmm. You know, you're totally letting go and relaxing, just like you would in a great game. You're just going with the flow in a great game. You're not really trying to relax. You're not really trying to breathe. You're just instinctively and unconsciously revealing, you know, your game. So anyway, that was a little bit of a tangent, but yes, the breath is a central theme in mental practice, generally speaking, and it would be something that if I know I'm on a little roll here, but if we did nothing else, Pete, but every day spent we're not even going to call it anything technical or formatted. If I said nothing else, look, just count your breath for 5 minutes, inhale one, exhale two, inhale three, exhale four. If you did nothing else but did that for 5 minutes, or even just watched your breath for 5 minutes, I would assure you there would be probably a very noticeable change in your mindset, in your psychology, in your energy, in your focus, in your awareness. And these are all concentration, maybe, your mental discipline, your sense of relaxation, your sense of being calmer, your sense of being more in tune with your instincts. There's that word again. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying, like, that's just a start. Where would we be as a race if everybody spent some more time just with their breathing?
Yeah, and I definitely know that doesn't happen a lot. That's why I thought it was going to be very interesting. The breathing technique through the meditation, obviously, this can be taught as part of the practice plan. Coaches can teach it. Players can work on it. Everybody can work on this even during the game. Explain a little bit how this kind of works.
Well, it's sort of like taking ground balls for an hour. Well, I was a driller. I was a worker.
Sure.
So taking grandma's for 15, 20 minutes a day, and you do that every day for 10 years, it becomes ingrained in you, right? So then in the game, you don't really have to think about a lot of technique. You might think about shuffling your feet or leaning forward on your toes a bit, side to side, whatever. But there's things that you – just a little very simple cues. So to me, meditation is the same idea. You spend 10 or 15 minutes, same as physical, same as the ground balls. You take 10 or 15 minutes a day. You're working with your breathing. You're working on letting go. You're working on quieting your mind. You're working on letting thoughts do whatever they want. You're working on relaxation. Well, you do that 15 minutes a day, every day for 10 years, and even 10 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get it in the game. The idea is that, again, you don't have to be really over conscientious. The idea is that your breath is there, just like the ground ball reps are in your system, and you maybe need to make a little reminder or a little tweak. But so you go to your breath in the game. It doesn't mean you have to be over consumed by it. It just means that, oh, I go to my breath and, oh, wow, that's meaningful to me because I've been working with it for the last 10 weeks every day. And I've been feeling relaxed because of it and quieter because of it and more in the present moment because of it. So now it becomes, yes, something that can really carry over in the game and be a great – I like the term baseline. It's a great baseline to have. It's like a tortoise pulls its head back in his shell. You know, the shell is his home.
Yeah.
And your breath, in a way, is like your home. And it's a great place to go to, especially if you need to. But again, it's just that's sort of the carryover effect that I think you were alluding to.
Yeah, and I'm also curious, you know, when players, because this makes it sound like, you know, the players can play to the tempo of the game, to the speed of the game and not get nervous as much. But also, you know, it's something that they can practice during the game in case they don't feel as comfortable or relaxed.
Well, yeah, because it's like here's the word again, default. If you've put it's like putting money in the bank and being able to pull money out of the bank. You keep depositing every day money in the bank. You keep putting deposits into your mental game through breathing and relaxation and meditation and so on. Well, it doesn't mean you're not going to go in a game and the bases are loaded, you know, and it's a 3-2 count and so on and so forth. It doesn't mean you're not going to feel tension or nervousness or anxiety. Well, number one, the idea that you have a practice, there may be less of that comes in or a minimal amount that comes in to begin with. And B, if some stuff does come in, you have tools. You have the ability to say, wait a minute, okay, I feel a little tension. Normally I might think and worry more because that might be my old default. But my new default now is just, hey, wait, let me just take a couple deep breaths, just like I do in my meditation. Let me get back to we haven't talked about this yet. This is where your default takes you to besides your breathing is, let me get back to my process, which is see the focal point and attack it. Because I've learned that that's what makes me the best pitcher I can be for the rest of my life is to have a focal point and attack it. Now all of a sudden you have some tools in place to default to. So that's the idea of this is that it doesn't mean you're not going to feel tension or anxiety. What it means is that if it comes up, you have tools because you've put the money in the bank. You've done the work. There's the discipline again. So, mm-hmm. And you have a chance to default now to a new system rather than without the practice, so to speak, of doing this. Your mind may default to where I think minds may tend to go when stress or anxiety comes up in a game. I use the word drama. Drama comes up, the bases are loaded, or if you mm-hmm. get a hit, you win. That's drama. And all of a sudden, the mind, it's like, you know, drama to me is like candy. It's sweet, it's exciting, it's potentially like, wow. But drama to me is also what can really get in the way and create a lot of problems. So, so again, it comes back to this idea of that if stuff comes up, you have a practice in place. You have some places to go to default to.
Sure. And, you know, what's interesting is you earlier on in the show, you mentioned, you know, culture of the Japanese. But what there's also the American culture that you mentioned in your article where we're more, you know, result oriented. So batting averages, wins and losses. So what you're saying is, we're trying to stay away from focusing on that part and become and think more of the process, and that's what this breathing technique or the meditation allows you to do.
Exactly. And I have a line I just love. It's one of my favorite lines. I tweet it all the time. I got it from a workshop from an amazing woman named Dr. Shauna Shapiro. And her line is, you become what you practice. And there's another second line that's similar. What you practice gets stronger. So our culture, I believe, and I believe our culture is getting way better. I mean, the Brian Keynes and Annie McKay's and the Tom Hansons and obviously the Ken Revisses of the world have really helped to, you know, help change our culture. But yes, I believe that, you know, maybe the Japanese culture, maybe one more of discipline and really just pounding the nail and pounding the nail and pounding the nail, which is a metaphor I love. You know, just don't look left or right. Just hit the center of the nail. And I think in our culture, I'm not judging this as right or wrong. It's just I think that we're a lot more consumed or aware by, as you said, the draft and where you're ranked and, you know, and scholarships and wins and losses and what's at stake. And there's just this high level of almost over-awareness, if you will, about consequences and results and who's watching and what's at stake. So I do feel like, and it's not just sports. I think in general, I mean, if you look at news and, you know, the news of the day, there's just a lot of quote unquote drama. So I do believe that, you know, our minds are around. And I think also we haven't talked about stuff like video games and, you know, smartphones, and there's so much going on. If you study the zone is about a very quiet, calm, instinctive place.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that, I'm not sure where the question was originally, but I think that our culture, maybe that's where it was, is that, you know, I talk a lot about this, you know, you become what you practice. And I think our culture has got us to practice really well something that's really kind of counter to the zone, which is drama and the future and the past and things that are out of our control. And so we've gotten really well practiced. So you could really say that human beings in any culture, generally speaking, we all need to, you become what you practice. We all need to practice more of being quieter, being calmer, being more in the present, being less addicted, or maybe that's not the right word, attached or over conscientious is really the best way of saying it, of the future and the past and the consequences. And that's why, to me, in the article, I talked about this word default. I just feel like, as human beings, we have built a default where our minds will tend to go to, oh, the bases are loaded, or if I get a hit, I'm above 300, or if I don't get a hit, I'm below 300, or if I throw three more shutout innings, my ERA is below 2, or there's 12 scouts in the stands today, or there's no scouts in the stands today.
Yeah.
We're playing the top-rated team in the conference, we're playing the bottom-rated team in the conference. See, to me, it all sounds important. It's all drama, and it all has zero. And I mean, it all has zero to do with the zone. Doesn't know about any of this stuff. The zone is not a thought. The zone is not a consequence. The zone is merely a revealing, if you will, of complete unconscious freedom of whatever you've inputted and trained, per se, or whatever you've allowed your natural abilities to do to take over in game situation or in any situation. So that was a little bit of a tangent, but that was, you know, it sort of is a very important theme, if you will, that it's just part of changing the culture and changing the way we look at the game. And by the way, every time I hear a golfer speak or I hear coaches speak nowadays, it's impressive. I do feel like our culture is really changing. You hear people talking about, I think, of Nick Saban and Bill Belichick right away.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, you talk about the process. You talk about listening to their interviews.
Yep.
Is it dramatic, or is it more under the quote-unquote nondescript category, right? Try to get an answer out of them about anything in the future, who they're playing. They don't care. They don't want to talk about it. All they care about is prepare. It's sort of the meditation, the discipline. And by the way, I truly believe that their players are defaulting to this because those are the themes that get pounded into their minds. And all of a sudden, they're sort of in a zone state or more receptive or more connected to that kind of a mindset, because you become what you practice. See, it keeps coming back to that. You become what you practice. This is what they've become.
Yeah, and we see it a lot. Unfortunately, you know, we just have to say it is what it is right now at the younger levels, because, you know, winning is stressed so much, and the stats are stressed so much that they're going to showcases. And again, showcases can be good in its own way. But, you know, they're going to all these things where they really don't need to compete. And you don't hear, you know, you hear a lot of coaches complaining, you know, the coaches I talk to at the higher level saying, we're not getting kids that learn how to compete. And I got to believe that a lot of this has to do with what you're talking about, the process. And for a lot of younger coaches, just so you know, we're going to get into the second half. Alan's going to get into the actual techniques, and he's going to tell you about the article you can go to also to follow how to work on the techniques to be able to work with your players. But one of the things I wanted to ask you also was, you know, coaches themselves, even including myself, you know, we're under pressure. We need to learn how to deal with the pressure. This type of program can help us understand how to deal with players also.
It's universal, Pete. I'm glad you brought it up. I've talked to coaches about this before, and I said, look, at the end of the day, if you're more clear-minded, you're more relaxed, you're less stressed, you're more present, you're more aware. Well, not only is it going to help you as a teacher to your kids, but I think it's going to help you obviously in a game situation relate to your kids. And also, I think the themes and messages that come out of coaches that are more in tune with in tune with a meditation practice, if you will, I think that it's almost energetic, meaning I think your vibes, if you will, I think the kids get that. I think that if you just aren't trying to fake it or aren't trying to just to do it, but I think if you really do become a more relaxed person, of course, and a clearer-minded person, I think other things that come out of meditation is you get higher sensitivity. So you become more acutely aware of things, and I think in a good way. I think you have more compassion. I think that your ability to communicate with kids from maybe an optimal point of view. So yes, I think that, look, at the end of the day, we're talking right now about kids and training and you know, the next generation, but I've never spoken ever that I can remember at an event where I had all the kids in a group, and I can't remember ever not saying to all the parents that were there or coaches, I said, please come over and lay down with the kids and don't be afraid. In fact, one of my favorite stories that thinking about that is I did a clinic with my partner up in Stockton, California. It was freezing cold outside. We went indoors, which was great. We did the throwing outside. We did the meditation inside. And the guy that hosted the clinic told me about a letter. I think it was maybe it was an email, but I think it was an old school letter. There was a very, very prominent attorney in town who was at the clinic because of his son. And he did the meditation, and he heard the talk, the same kind of themes that we're talking about. And he said it absolutely, the way he was in court and speaking. I can't remember if he said it was going to help or it did help. I think he said it already has made an impact on him. And look, at the end of the day, coaches, we're all people. We're all trying to get healthier, happier, more effective, more efficient. So, you know, I'm really glad you brought that up, because yes, we want the coaches to be able to, teach this to the kids, but boy, it would be magical if the coaches could actually hear this. And I would encourage coaches to apply it to themselves first anyway, so they can get some experience and they can get a feel for it. They can relate to it. And by the way, what happens, like anything in life, if you do something new and you have great results from it, what's the first thing you want to do? You want to share it with everybody.
Like, absolutely.
So yes, this is going to be for everybody.
That's awesome. And I think that's important, because I know I've got to go through it, and I think that's going to help in also being able, as you said, to teach it. Now, one more last question before we take a break. The state of mind that we're talking about, let's say I go through the program, whoever's going through the program, are you going to know when you're in that state of mind or when you're not? Is it kind of like, you know, when you're hitting, you're hitting off a tee, you don't feel real good with your swing, so you can feel that. Is this something you can feel and then understand how to get back in that state of mind?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, what a great question, Pete. I'll tell you, one of the ways that's very fascinating that you feel the contrast is, let's say you start your practice for a week or so, and you're starting to feel more relaxed, you're starting to feel some benefits. And then, and we can talk about this later as far as when the best time to do it is, but let's say all of a sudden one morning you wake up and you're running late and this and that, and you just skipped your session. What tends to really happen is as you're going through the day, you start noticing that, man, I just don't feel quite, something's a little off, or I'm just a little less relaxed, or I'm a little more stressed. And that's one of the greatest feedbacks you can get, actually, on the value of the practice. Because sometimes you're doing the practice and you feel like, you know, like you may not notice major benefits, you know, I think you do notice major benefits actually right away, but you may have a day where it's like, well, I feel pretty relaxed. But it's a lot of times when you don't do the practice, you really tend to notice the contrast. But yes, to answer your question too, if you are in a good rhythm with a practice so that you have a good pulse on how you feel and how you're becoming, then you start noticing in game situations that you're more sensitive to noticing that you are relaxed or noticing that you are tense. And I do think remember earlier I used the idea of heightened sensitivity. One of the really great benefits of meditation is you tend to really heighten your senses. So that would go to your question strongly, that you do start becoming very sensitive to your state. And I guess that would be the simplest way to answer it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And folks, we are going to take a short break. We are going to be right back in the second half. We're going to get into the techniques and also how you're going to implement this in your practice. This first half was outstanding. We'll be right back with Alan Jaeger of Jaeger Sports.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.